Moving on to California State Proposition 2. This is an initiative that would take a large pot of money initially created by voters by approving a tax on people with extraordinarily high incomes to pay for mental health services and giving permission from the voters to take enough money out of that pot to finance $2 billion in affordable housing bonds for people with mental illness. This is something that has created a certain amount of controversy within the mental health advocacy community. Because the money is needed for both services and housing, not everyone wants those two to be in competition. We're going to have both sides on. Joining us on the pro side, Deborah Anderlew. She is communications director with the Steinberg Institute, which works on brain health issues. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you, Brian.
And on the con side, Gigi Crowder, executive director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness Contra Costa County chapter. Her chapter is opposing Proposition 2. I want to be clear, though, the statewide NAMI organization is for it. Gigi, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Deborah, because you're in the affirmative, we'll start with you. Why Prop 2? Why should the voters move this money around?
Well, thank you. And first, I want to be clear, but along with statewide NAMI, the statewide Mental Health America supports this. Doctors groups, the emergency doctors, pretty much every mental health provider and advocacy group in the state. There has been actually very, very little opposition to this. The idea behind it, again, when Prop 63, the millionaire's tax you mentioned, when it was passed in 2004, the idea was to strengthen mental health services throughout California. And a big intention at the time was, in fact, to affect the huge population of people who were on the streets and homeless because they are mentally ill. We know that of the 134,000 Californians who are homeless, about a third of them are there because they are mentally ill, which is really just a shocking thing to have to say, you know, that because you have an illness or a disease, you end up on the streets. We wouldn't say that for cancer or so many other illnesses. But here, this many years later, we feel like as much good as the proposition has done, as many people as, you know, have been helped, that homelessness still is a huge issue, and in fact, probably in most communities in California, people would say it is the biggest quality of life issue. So what Prop 2 does is it takes a very small percentage of this Prop 63 money. It would take about $120 million a year over 30 years, and this is a pot of money, by the way, that generates $2.2 billion a year. So it takes a very small percentage to leverage a huge infusion of money up front, a $2 billion bond, so that we could create housing linked to services using a model of treatment and housing that we know actually has been proven to work over the years for people who are living homeless with mental illness. So the idea here is that on their own, for this population, services alone don't work. You really need services tied to housing, or you're not spending that money well. So this would make sure that across the state, counties have a huge infusion of funds to build the housing they need to make these services effective.
Gigi Crowder, sounds reasonable. Why are you against it?
We're against it, and I would ask any of the individuals who were surveyed who are backing this initiative one question. Are you a primary caregiver for a person who lives with a severe mental illness? Are you in a position to offer more than an opinion, or do you have facts to back up the fact that individuals should be using what has been proposed, a housing first model? Individuals that live with severe mental illnesses, whether they're on the streets, homeless, unfortunately, and dealing with additional concerns like substance abuse, are not. It is a very debilitating illness, which many of us who are family members, especially here in Contra Costa County, have tried to find housing solutions for our loved ones. Some individuals have taken out second mortgages on their own home, thinking, well, my loved one cannot live with me, but I do want them to have stable, secure, and safe housing. So let me try putting them in their own place. And it has, for a lot of individuals, ended in tragic results because there are skill sets that need to be in place. The idea that you would take someone who lived on the streets and put them into a housing situation without the treatment and wraparound services, it baffled me that someone obviously doesn't understand the debilitating components of a mental illness. So family members get it. And that's why family members, those that I represent, my own belief system as well, having worked in the mental health field hands-on directly, having helped individuals find secure housing, Section 8 vouchers so they could live alone, have learned hard lessons about what needs to take place first. Now, some of what is promising has been some of the full service partnerships. Some of the things that if you take away the treatment dollars, we'll have less resources to do. I don't understand why this needs to be a statewide initiative when locally counties can use now the Mental Health Services Act dollars and decide what type of housing is most needed. Sadly, some individuals need very supervised housing. They need to be reminded to take their psychiatric medication. So the groups that have been mentioned in support of this, I'd like to know how many of them really have firsthand experience. Not a family member who gets a phone call when their sister's son is not doing well, but when they get the call themselves. Because that's a very different voice than the voice that I've been hearing for the folks that are for it. They do not understand, and we're in a club in Contra Costa County. None of us wanted to be a part of it. We were drafted into it, but we love our loved ones, and we want what's best for them. And we know the treatment, the appropriate treatment services, stability, housing that supports individuals is what's needed most, not taking away the dollars, because some counties didn't do necessarily what they should have done with that and had them the money still sitting there waiting.
All right, Gigi Kreider, I think we got your points. Let's put them to Deborah Anderloo for a response. The first one was the point that housing without adequate supportive services and care connected to the housing would not be useful for people with mental disorders. Deborah Anderloo?
Thanks, Brian. First of all, we're talking about housing that is absolutely linked to services. In fact, for counties to get this money, they have to commit to providing services for the units created for at least 20 years. We're also talking about a model, and I could, I've looked at the research myself. This has been years and years of research throughout the country. It's a model called permanent supportive housing. It has absolutely been shown to be more effective than transitional housing, shelters, all sorts of things for getting people into treatment and keeping them off the streets. And in fact, RAND just released a study along these lines looking at what Los Angeles County has already done along these lines, and they found that in just a few years they were able to move 3,500 people off the streets, and it saved the county 20% in costs, because these are people who, if they weren't in these programs, end up cycling through our jails, through our emergency rooms. We've all been there. We've all seen them. And to her second point, I would say the groups we're talking about who support this are the upfront providers. These are the people who are either have family members or live with mental illness or who work with people on the streets. And if I understand it correctly, I mean, there's a certain percentage of people with serious mental illness who are not able to live on their own. They need to live in sort of an involuntary situation. This is not that. This is for people who can be moved into housing and can take part in wraparound services, but it's not an institution per se. The thinking here, and counties across the state, every single county has already applied for funds. So these are the providers who are working with people who think they need this money, that this will improve treatment, and that it will help tens of thousands of people. For people who need involuntary commitment, which is maybe what Gigi's talking about.
Well, let's not speculate what she's talking about. We'll pass the microphone back to Gigi Crowder. Gigi, I want to get specific. It sounds like you personally provide care for somebody in your life. What are you afraid you will lose access to if Proposition 2 passes?
One of the things that family members recognize, that others who are making this decision without input from the family members who
don't talk about the process. Just tell me what you're worried will happen.
I have seen and heard stories since my name is listed in the ballot for individuals to call me. I've heard family members calling, being very appreciative of the fact that I get, and our affiliate gets, the fact that
I'm sorry, Gigi, I'm trying to pin down the specifics of your argument here. What are you specifically afraid you'll lose?
We would lose the treatment dollars that could help us have more programs. So there's a difference between a person who lives with a mental illness and a person who lives with a severe mental illness, which is a severe mental illness is the individuals you would find homeless. Those are the people who have persistent severe mental illnesses. So it's not a small percentage of individuals who would possibly lose their gain benefit from this. Our family members have loved ones who sometimes are in compliance with the medications, seeing their therapist, and the symptoms just don't go away because they want them to go away. They're there. The nature of the illness is I've had people who lived in the best supported independent living situation, but because of the nature of the illness, have decompensated.
Right, but so you're afraid that you're going to lose, like, caregiver reimbursement from the state? You're afraid you're going to lose medical services? What?
I have seen counties not do these programs in a manner consistent with producing the best outcomes for the individuals, even when housing is included. I've seen them put individuals in the housing and then not show up often enough to be able to support them and make sure they're taking their medications. I think we're losing board and care type facilities, and funding for those type of situations should be made available.
Okay, let's put that to Deborah Anderlew. Is this going to be in competition with funding for board and care facilities?
No, again, a big part of this is to infuse money up front, you know, much like you would with a mortgage when you're buying a house, or much as California has tackled other crises, that we're going to leverage money so that we can get this $2 billion in money up front rather than for a specific kind of housing. And that money in turn, by the way, communities are expected to leverage it maybe 10 times more using federal funding and tax credits, et cetera. So this will be in addition to what communities already offer. And also,
well, the money is coming from somewhere. There's an opportunity cost to pulling $140 million annually out of whatever's already being spent on to finance the bonds that would pay for this housing. So what's it going to come away from? What's going to go away for the sake of building this housing?
Well, for example, that's money that maybe now is going into housing, but you now get to leverage it to a much greater extent. And we also know that some counties have had difficulty, you know, knowing exactly how to spend all of their funds. You know, we've all read and talked about that. And so this funding is there. Counties don't seem to be concerned that they're going to have to cut services, to people, because this is again generating money up front that they can leverage. And again, it has to be.
But it's $140 million out of the budget. It's $140 million going to building physical things. I mean, that's going to come away from services, isn't it?
Well, it's going to make the services work. You know, one could argue that without the housing, these services are not effective.
Okay, Gigi Crowder, let's take that question up. I, in the course of reporting, speak to a lot of homeless people here in the Inner East Bay. A lot of them do have mental disorders, and a lot of them say that being on the streets makes them much, much harder to manage, harder to stay on a medication schedule, harder to stay in touch with medical care providers. And just like the unpredictability of sleep, the stress and vulnerability that comes from sleeping on the street, I think might make a lot of us start displaying symptoms of mental disorders. Isn't housing a good treatment for people in that situation?
I definitely agree that no one wants to see anyone homeless. But this housing crisis that we're in, some of it was created with the fact that the county did not know how best to approach addressing housing under the Mental Health Services Act. So what wound up happening is a lot of individuals would drop in and out of services because of the poor planning on the behalf of the counties. That's just the reality. And so for me, looking at, let's just take Los Angeles for an example. We all widely recognize that it houses the most individuals with mental illness in their criminal justice system. So if you're not looking at root causes and how individuals end up incarcerated because they have a severe mental illness and they make bad decisions because they're not being treated. And for me, as an African-American, the bulk of those individuals wind up being African-American and homeless. Why take the money from treatment services? Many of us Americans who are homeowners, Californians, would be willing to have a tax around our property, a tax around our income, a tax around sales, because this homelessness issue is affecting all of us. Why would we try and solve the problem with the limited amount of dollars that we get from Mental Health Services Act? In most counties, when Mental Health Services Act was passed in 2004, it was supposed to be the cherry on top. It was supposed to be the extra, whatever it takes dollars. It has become the core funding for a lot of counties.
Okay, let's put that question to Deborah Anderlew. That's a fair question. I assume you were involved in the conversation that led to this getting on the ballot in its present form. Why cannibalize an existing stream of funding? Why not ask voters to pay extra for housing people with mental disorders?
Two things. You mentioned I'm the communications director for the Steinberg Institute, and that was founded by Daryl Steinberg, who is now mayor of Sacramento, but he was a longtime legislator and was president of the state Senate, and he in fact authored the Mental Health Services Act, Prop 63, and he would tell you if he were on this call that it was absolutely his intention that this would impact mentally ill people who are living homeless. One of the things that happened, I think, after Prop 63 happened, is again this model, permanent supportive housing, was very clearly rose to the top as a model that works for getting people with mental illness off the streets and getting them into recovery. But as Gigi said, not every county was doing it. So the idea of taking this to the ballot was to create an incentive so that we scale up statewide a model that we know is effective and that will have a huge impact in getting thousands of people off the street.
Right, but you could have gone straight to the ballot with a $2 billion bond above and beyond the funding that already existed to pay for this type of housing and create the exact same incentives for counties. Did it just poll differently? Did you think it wasn't politically feasible to do that?
I was not in on those kinds of conversations, but I think this didn't just suddenly go to the ballot. This was a law 2 years ago where Kevin De Leon and the legislature approved a law thinking we've got a big pot of money here. And it was intended to help people who are homeless and mentally ill get off the streets. Let's make sure counties are scaling up this effective model. So there was a law that was passed. It was signed by the governor. And then subsequently, there was legal action that has held it up in courts. So what Proposition 2 does is says it goes back to the voters, and we believe the voters are going to say, yes, we think this is an appropriate use of this $2.2 billion a year that we're getting in mental health services funds. We do think it should be housing. It should be funding permanent supportive housing, so housing linked to services that will helped impact our homeless problem.
All right, that's Deborah Anderlew. She is arguing in favor of Proposition 2. Proposition 2 would reallocate some of the money created for mental health services by California's original millionaire's tax to fund housing bonds to create supportive housing for people with mental disorders in the state of California. Since we give Deborah the first word in this debate, Gigi Crowder, we will give you the last for the con side. Go ahead.
I am working with a faith center in Alameda County who's had housing available associated with their church. They had extra space. There's been a lot of gentrification in Oakland, so a lot of individuals have moved out. It was brought to me by a staff person and our Alameda County Behavioral Health Care when I worked there to move this effort. It's sitting vacant, and this is a facility that's willing to support individuals with mental illness. The counties do not necessarily have the skill set to move things forward. It gets caught in bureaucracy over and over again. And in this particular community, they're not even dealing with NIMBYism. They got the support from the community, and we're 3 years waiting to see when the county will release the funds so that this pastor can have him listen to the community, would open up that space. Another thing about NIMBYism is in Walnut Creek, in the county that I'm representing, 600 residents decided that they do not want a residential treatment facility with 13 beds in their community. So NIMBYism wasn't even addressed. Lots of times by the time the housing is built, there's so many conditional use permits that individuals with the most severe mental illnesses with criminal backgrounds who may have had arson, they're not even the individuals who could get into the housing. So what you wind up doing is you wind up creaming, and you don't get who your intended population was going to be in the first place. I've seen that happen over and over again. And I'm just hoping that maybe the Durell Steinberg Institute will step up and start addressing the many people who are criminalized for having a mental illness, so who are in jail instead of being housed in treatment programs. I don't want any dollars to be taken away from treatment as long as I know there's individuals with being criminalized for having a medical condition.
All right. That's the voice of Gigi Crowder. She's executive director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness Contra Costa County chapter. Her chapter is opposing Proposition 2, as I said earlier, and I'll repeat it so there's no confusion. The statewide National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI organization, is supporting Proposition 2. On the pro side, we had Deborah Anderlew. She is communications director with the Steinberg Institute, which works on brain health issues. Thanks, both of you, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.